Hi, everyone. Welcome. Today is April 2nd, 2015, and this is a subcommittee on public safety of the Joint Ways and Means Committee. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5531, the Oregon State Police Budget. Today, we are taking public testimony. There is a long list, and I don't even have it all yet, so we're going to do three-minute time. So if I interrupt you rudely, that's why. So, and I'm going to do on deck, too, so that people in the overflow know when they're coming up. So Darren Phillips, Bob Russell, and Al Elkins first, and George Houston, Maureen Minthon, and Commissioner Jennifer Wheeler are next. Do we need another chair? We can roll one of those chairs over.
We'll just roll that chair.
There you go. Or we could do two at a time if that's easier. I always forget. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I'm here today in support of OSP's budget, particularly requesting additional troopers for the patrol division. Between 2010 and 2012 and 2013, truck-involved crashes on Oregon highways increased by 4.89%. Truck-at-fault crashes increased by 3.9% during the same time frame. You may recall that between 2011 and the 2013 biennium, there were 49 troopers that were reduced at OSP. We think that the increase in crash rates certainly is attributable to less troopers out on the highway, and we would certainly advocate that we add some more. From what I understand, Oregon is 46th in the nation in per capita troopers. That is embarrassing to me and certainly doesn't help my industry at all. Work zones have been a particular focus for us for safety the last year or so. Matt Garrett has created a task force on work zones, which we've been participating in. We're averaging 9 deaths a year on Oregon in Oregon work zones. 4 out of 5 of them are car drivers. But 1 out of 5 are workers in those work zones. The most effective way to increase safety in work zones is to have a trooper present. It's not necessary in all work zones. Some of them, the workers are separated by hard barriers from the traffic. But when they're doing paving, and particularly night paving and those kinds of things, they can't use the barriers. Troopers save lives, both car drivers as well as the workers. So we would really strongly advocate that you add additional troopers to OSP's patrol division. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Darren Phillips. I've been a state trooper for 27 years. I'm the president of our association, our union. I'm here also in support of the budget, but I would hope to bring maybe some of the priorities of the troopers to all of you. The first thing that comes to mind is obviously manpower. We all know we're doing less or more with less. We're fine with that. We want to get our numbers back up truly, because we do agree that public safety hinges on how many of us are out there. But the one thing I hear over and over and over is equipment. And I have to thank the superintendent and all of you, because in the last 5 years, we've come into the next century of law enforcement with equipment, as far as rifles, computers, all the things that when many of you were going through your election process heard from us saying, we don't compare to Portland police, we don't compare to Salem police. We do now. The last piece of that is our vehicles. And I hear story after story after story of trooper in Myrtle Creek getting called out in the middle of the night because there are no patrols. He suits up, gets in his own personal car, drives 20 miles to Roseburg, loads up a car, makes sure he has flares, all of his patrol equipment, and drives 25, 30, 40, 50 miles maybe to Glendale for a crash. Not ideal, but if we can get those vehicles at a one-to-one ratio, I think it really helps our response times and our ability to do that job. Dovetailing that on people, we have a lot of attrition. Obviously, people are retiring, and we are trying to fill those gaps, but we are sorely below where we need to be on our numbers, frankly. The last part of the vehicle piece that I keep bringing up when I come and testify in front of all of you is I was fortunate enough to go to Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina. And think of what happens in Oregon when we have a tsunami on the North Coast and 100 troopers respond to help in that situation. Everybody else coming to work that night doesn't have a car. So how are we going to cover the entire state? And we really see ourselves as the first response. We are your police force, and we look at you to help us. We don't have a county commission or anybody else to legislate taxes to help us. So we're looking to you, and that's what the troopers would ask for. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, for the record, my name's Al Elkins. I'm representing the Oregon Hunters Association. We are here, too, today to support the budget. One of our number one priorities is to keep the game enforcement officers in the field at numbers that are effective. I'm going to talk to you today about the decline of deer and elk populations in Oregon. And normally, when I do that, I'm talking about cougars or wolves. Today I'm talking about a two-legged a predator, and that person is usually unlawfully taking wildlife in the terms of poaching. In the real world, I would be sitting before you, in the ideal world, I would be sitting before you today asking for more troopers for our game enforcement officers, but I understand the restrictions of the budget. What I would like to do is ask you if we could have additional money for additional time for the current staff to work on areas within the state where we think the poaching problem is the greatest. We have been told it's a huge problem. We have been told it's at epidemic levels in some portions of the state. We would like to work with Captain Samuels and his staff in helping curtail this problem. The second piece I'd like to talk to you today is about the allotment of $5 million that was in the agency recommended budget for the OSP game enforcement officers. It was funded by general fund. When it got to the governor's recommended budget, it no longer had general fund support. We would like to see that go back to general fund support and not be picked up by license fees from hunters and those that fish. That concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. George Houston, Randy Minthorne, and Commissioner Jennifer Wheeler. And next up, DA Villens and DA Herman.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Jennifer Wheeler. I'm Polk County Commissioner, and I'm also the Vice Chair for the Association of Counties Public Safety Committee. I'm here today to support the budget for the state police and also to publicly thank them for all of their hard work and assistance in our county and counties across the state that are in distress. As you may know, Polk County is struggling to fund basic public safety services, and as a result, we are seeking voter approval for an operating levy to return public safety services to an acceptable level. In March of 2014, our county was forced to drop our sheriff patrol to 10 hours per day. Since then, we've had over 2,200 calls that have gone into our 911 center, where the caller was told that there were no deputies available to respond. One of the most unfortunate impacts has been to our local first responders, having no deputies available to assist in their efforts to deal with car crashes and other emergencies has placed both our first responders and those who need their services in jeopardy. Medics have also had to delay response to domestic violence and assault situations when a deputy would normally go in and stabilize the situation before they entered the scene. Despite these challenges, the Oregon State Police has stepped up in a major way in our county by diverting state troopers from the Salem and McMinnville offices during off hours to help cover major incidents when there are troopers available. Challenges and struggles like these examples are happening throughout Oregon. Superintendent Evans was present at each of last year's Association of Counties Public Safety Summits, stressing the need for more partnerships and cooperation amongst all law enforcement agencies. And I would like to thank Superintendent Evans for his commitment to help all citizens in Oregon with this support. AOC strongly supports the department's budget and all policy option packages that will help the department serve Oregonians to the level that we expect. And I thank you for your giving me the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Grab that mic. Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm going to summarize the written testimony that you've already been provided. My name is Maureen Minthorn, and I'm the gaming inspector with the Umatilla Tribal Gaming Commission, a position I've held for the past 14 years. I appear this afternoon on behalf of my tribe, the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, and also on behalf of the Oregon Association of Indian Gaming Commissions. Before I proceed with my testimony, I'd like to say this. The Oregon tribes are committed to maintaining a positive and a productive relationship with the Oregon State Police Tribal Gaming Section, and we will continue to do so regardless of the outcome of this budget issue. The Oregon Gaming Tribes pay close attention to the OSP Tribal Gaming Section budget for a simple reason. We pay for it. The tribes fully fund this section of the Oregon State Police. No dollars are allocated from the state's general fund. Based on our review of the Tribal Gaming Section 15-17 proposed budget, we, combined with various factors that have arisen over the last several years, we are requesting that the TGS budget be reduced by 2 non-sworn personnel. They currently have 13 FTEs. Our reduction request is based on the following factors. 1, the TGS personnel have consistently been assigned to perform services unrelated to tribal gaming. According to OSP data, TGS personnel were assigned to non-tribal gaming duties for a total of 1,600 hours in the 11-13 biennium and a total of 1,700 hours in the first 18 months of the current biennium. That is a grand total of approximately 3,400 hours of staff time spent elsewhere. 2, because of the closure of the Burns Paiute Old Camp Casino, they have one less tribal casino to monitor. 3, for the remaining 8 tribal casinos, the demands on the tribal gaming section have been reduced in recent years. For example, background checks almost exclusively used to be conducted by TGS, but now they are mostly performed by tribal gaming commissions. 4, our Tribal Gaming Commission staff, budgets, and expertise have grown considerably over the past 2 decades. We are the primary regulators of the gaming going on in our tribal casinos. At last count, the Oregon tribes employ 219 full-time regulators, including 77 Gaming Commission personnel, 142 surveillance personnel, and we operate with a combined annual budget of over $17 million. And 5, the Tribal Gaming Commission has consistently underspent its budget. In the 11-13 biennium, the personnel budget of $2.4 million was underspent by $545,000, or approximately 22%. And in the current biennium, according to their own data, the personnel budget of $2.6 million is underspent by $488,000, or approximately 25% of their personnel budget. I know I speak for all Oregon Tribal Gaming Commissions in stating that we are committed to ensuring the fairness, integrity, security, and honesty of the gaming that's going on in our operations. As already mentioned, in the past 2 biennia, the Tribal Gaming Section assigned their personnel to over 3,400 hours of non-tribal gaming functions. They underspent their personnel budget by at least 22%. Yet tribal gaming in Oregon has seen no major incidents of criminal activity, gaming fraud, or embezzlement.
Can I just interrupt really quickly, because your time is up? So can you give us a quick sentence or two? And we have your written testimony.
And we don't believe that our request will impair the Tribal Gaming Section's ability to perform their monitoring functions under the compacts, and we believe that their own data supports that statement. Thank you.
Excellent.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question?
Senator Winters.
What is the likelihood of the Burns Paiute reopening their casino?
Well, as I mentioned, they've been closed since late 2012, and although, of course, we would hope that they reopen and support their being reopening, we don't believe it's likely in the immediate future.
Thank you.
On the business, I suppose.
Questions?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields. My name is George Houston. I'm the president of the Oregon chapter of the Foundation for North American Wild Sheep. Here to testify today for the OSP Fish and Wildlife Division. Those folks do an outstanding job in the field. The regional and field staff support officers are supportive, responsive, innovative. They're customer service based, and they're very, very competent. their dual role in the field, in any jurisdiction that they're selected to serve in, is really, really valuable to the folks on site, in that they work game and fish violations. They also very effectively work regular criminal investigations and response. You need to keep that in mind as you work their budget. As the economy is in a down state, oftentimes hunting and fishing activities are extremely valuable to the families that reside in the smaller communities in any town, Oregon. It's really, really significant to us that $5.2 million that the governor put into his recommended budget in the past, coming out of the general fund, indeed stay coming out of the general fund. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. Do you have any questions or concerns I can help with?
Any questions? Thank you. DA Herman and DA Biddlins. And next up we'll have Chief Spaulding, Chief Roberts, and Sheriff Meyer.
Chair Williamson, Chair Shields, members of the committee, my name is Dinah Vidalins, and I'm Crick County District Attorney, and I'm here as Crick County District Attorney and also on behalf of the Oregon Association of District Attorneys. In Crick County, we have one detective in the Sheriff's Office and no detectives in the Prineville Police Department. The Oregon State Police provides wonderful resources that help us investigate major incidents and use of deadly physical force in Crick County. The Oregon State Police lead the Tri-County Major Crime Team, which is comprised of law enforcement from Jefferson, Crick, and Deschutes County. And by way of example, I'll give you a quick example of a case where OSP is really instrumental in us in the arrest of the suspect. A 14-year-old young man and his family were asleep in a fifth wheel, and he was shot in the head with a bullet that came just through the walls of the trailer. Nobody in the immediate area, no suspects whatsoever, and no reason for why this happened. Oregon State Police came over to support the Crick County Sheriff's Office, providing detectives. Fish and Wildlife troopers were able to track the scene and discovered the staging area where the suspect was. We recovered casings from the scene where the suspect was, led to search warrants, and within 72 hours, we had the suspect in custody. Without the perimeter support, without the Oregon State Crime Lab, State Police Crime Lab, without the detectives, and without the Fish and Wildlife Division, I do not believe that the Sheriff's Office would have made an arrest in that case. And by way of another quick example about how Oregon State Police supports us every day, if we have a witness that we need to be interviewed who's in Ontario or Roseburg or Salem, Oregon State Police, if I make the phone call, will handle that interview, where otherwise I wouldn't have that happen because Prineville Police Department, the Crick County Sheriff's Office, simply doesn't have the resources to travel either in-state or out-state, outside of state. So I'm very thankful that the Oregon State Police provide support to keep Crick County citizens safe, and I urge you to support the budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob.
Thank you, Co-Chair Shield, Co-Chair Williamson, members of the committee. My name is Bob Herman. I'm the district attorney in Washington County, and I also serve this year as the president of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. And I, too, am here to speak in support of the state police budget. I want to focus on the crime lab services. As you know, 36 counties in this state, some big, some very small. I can tell you for sure that the crime lab services are invaluable, essential, and critical to each and every one of the counties. It's something we all share, for sure. When I was putting my comments together, I realized that often when I'm out talking to citizens or students and I'm describing about a criminal case and all the essential parts to it, sometimes the crime lab gets left out. We know the obvious when they analyze something, but what's left out is that oftentimes they're part of the investigation. In many counties, they're part of the crime scene. If they're not there physically, they're there in spirit, because they often train our police officers and agencies in terms of evidence collection, how it's done, how it should be preserved, so that it comes into the crime lab in a form that can be analyzed. The overall value of the crime lab to the system in total is often overlooked. Their analysis, their expertise, their reputation leads to the resolution of cases, and oftentimes we don't think about that, but cases don't go to trial in many cases because when the defense looks at it, they see what their options are, and the expertise and, like I say, the professionalism of the crime state police and the crime lab people end up getting cases resolved without trials. They're known for their accountability, their integrity, their professionalism, their efficiency, their accessibility and training. And I've been doing this for 40 years. I say that with confidence and with experience. Just some quick examples from my attorneys. DUI cases, particularly drug-impaired cases, their crime lab has personnel been very important. Their toxicologists and their forensic scientists are always accessible with a phone call for advice to our attorneys. They're helpful at trials, both in their testimony and the manner in which they testify and their expertise, listening at times at trial to defense experts to assist us in kind of the technology that's involved that we may not be familiar with. And they're helpful over the phone at times in helping us with a subsequent cross-examination, a very practical service to the attorneys. Just within the last 2 weeks, by example, we had a DV sexual assault case where DNA evidence analyzed by the crime lab on the victim's leg was very critical in terms of providing evidence to the jury in their consideration. And also an attempted murder case where DNA was found on a rock out in a field that was relevant to the case. And in that same case, we had an intoxicant expert from the crime lab that testified to help explain, interpret medical records of the defendant, and also explained some classification of drugs that was relevant to the defense in the case. So while singing their praises, I would simply circle back to the top and say we recognize, as efficient as they are, the crime lab is certainly understaffed. There's backlogs in both DNA, biology matters, and certainly in property crimes, which probably affect more of our citizens than anything else. And so evidence unanalyzed or evidence delayed is justice delayed. So thank you.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Chief Spaulding, Chief Roberts, and Sheriff Meyer. You guys all fit up there together?
What are you trying to say?
And next up will be Stan Steele, Mike Breed, and Becky Jackson. Go ahead.
Thank you. Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Spaulding. I'm the Chief of Police in the City of Beaverton and also representing the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police as the Vice President. Last night I had an opportunity to be invited to the Reynolds High School in Troutdale as they were recognizing the individuals who helped assist in the unfortunate tragedy last June from the school shooting there. One of the things that I was very impressed upon was the fact that all the partnerships there. There was individuals there from the FBI, the ATF, the OSP, local law enforcement, state law enforcement, and federal law enforcement. And it was made very clear to me that we, in all of our own individual entities, cannot do this job alone in keeping our community safe. It's imperative that we all work together closely. And this clearly evidenced the value of these partnerships, and everybody coming together and seeing all the different partners there last night was really hit home to me, and again shows the value of agencies like OSP in terms of the value to all the other small agencies. I had polled many of the other agencies in Washington County and spoke to some other chiefs and sheriffs in terms of, you know, what they see as the value from the Oregon State Patrol. And, you know, fortunately in Beaverton, we're a little bit more fiscally stable than some of our smaller area agencies around us, but there are a lot of small rural agencies in West Washington County, such as North Plains, Forest Grove, that really rely on the patrol services of the Oregon State Patrol. And they rely on them in such ways as enforcement on the freeways, also assisting in traffic collisions, and also handling priority calls for service when there's insufficient personnel in their own local agencies. One of the things that I was told was that there used to be an office in Beaverton back in around 1990 that was taken away. And over this last 25 years or so, the population of the county has actually doubled. So the need is clearly ever present. And that was one of the themes in terms of the shortage of personnel. We don't see a lot of the state troopers in the Washington County area, which means that we all have to step up as some of the smaller agencies and police the highways and handle collisions and do a lot of the work that is currently being, you know, that we're missing from the OSP. The other areas that we all rely on are some of the things that have already been mentioned, but I'll touch on those briefly, such as the criminal justice information systems and the law enforcement enforcement data systems. These are critical database systems that all of us agencies in Oregon rely upon in our day-to-day use. Without these systems, we'd be significantly hampered by the job that we do. You've already heard a little bit about the Forensic Services Division, and this is the crime scene processing, and we already know that they're already overburdened, and without the assistance of the OSP Crime Lab, our investigations would clearly be incomplete. We all rely on the state medical examiner's portion of the OSP and all the identification services that are provided to all the different agencies, such as the automated fingerprint identification system, the computerized criminal history, and the firearms check system, and the intoxilizer, which supports our drunk driving enforcement. The Amber Alerts, as we all know, we don't have that many of them, fortunately, but they're also critical and they're also supported by the OSP.
Chief, can you, your buzzer just went off.
Oh, did
so if you want to give me a quick wrap-up,
I can do
great.
That. So let me just give you two quick quotes then from some of the my fellow partner agencies, and one of them from Tigard said it's hard to express how further cuts to OSP would impact Tigard. And the second one, OSP has been great partners with the Washington County Law Enforcement. They are a professional, polished police organization. I just wish there was a few more of them in our county. So we, OACP, strongly support the governor's proposed budget. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Williamson and Shields, members of the committee. My name is Stuart Roberts. I've been a sworn law enforcement officer in Eastern Oregon for 23 years, the last 13 of which I've served as the chief of police in the city of Pendleton. I'm here today in support of the Oregon State Police proposed budget, as well as wanting to stress the importance of appropriately staffed and or funded divisions within the Oregon State Police in rural Oregon. To illustrate my point, what I'd like to do is I'd like to describe two separate crimes that were committed in the city of Pendleton in 2013 and 2014. Both had a common thread, which we probably would not have recognized had we not had the services of the Oregon State Police. August the 14th, 2013, 19-year-old Pendleton resident Amy Jane Branhagen was murdered in a motel room at 2:30 in the afternoon in downtown Pendleton. Within a half hour of receiving the 911 call, we had resources from the Oregon State Police on scene, including trooper personnel who assisted with the security of the scene. We also had a forensic criminalist from the Pendleton lab on scene. They spent about 9+ hours not only identifying, preserving, and collecting 50+ items of evidence out of that room in 100+ degree temperature weather. They were very committed to ensuring that we were able to secure everything that we needed to progress the investigation. We also had detectives that arrived, readily accepted duties and responsibilities associated with furthering the investigation, and reported back. As the investigation progressed, we ended up with a partial male profile from underneath the fingernail of the female victim. There was not sufficient ability to compare that to the CODIS system, which is a combined DNA index, so we were kind of stuck without a lot of leads to pursue. August the 9th of 2014, 54-year-old Pendleton resident Karen Lang was brutally assaulted with a piece of galvanized pipe as she walked along the River Parkway, which parallels the Umatilla River east to west through the city of Pendleton. She was struck several times in the head and left for dead. That was about 6 o'clock in the evening. She was reported missing at 11. And we found her at 6 o'clock the next morning in the heavy vegetation alongside of the river within probably minutes, if not hours of death. She is alive today. She had a long struggle and or battle through the perseverance of the Oregon State Police and the assistance of resources provided throughout the year. We were eventually able to identify a suspect. We disseminated information concerning that suspect, and on August the 29th of 2014, a caterer who works out of our local convention center reported seeing the individual with inside of the convention center. We had an officer right there at the time. He was assisted by the Oregon State Police. They quickly established a perimeter. We held that perimeter for the better part of 45 minutes while we were waiting for additional resources to make entry into the large facility when one of the perimeter troopers noted seeing a foot sticking out of the ceiling. We readily recognized that as being our suspect, made entry, took him into custody without incident, ultimately transported him where a statement was obtained from him. We determined that he had left the Marine Corps, gotten a bus ticket, traveled north, got off the bus in Pendleton, lived on our streets for the better part of a year with 4 law enforcement contacts. He was not in any national database. This is a case that would not have been made without the assistance
the professionalism and the dedication of the Oregon State Police, as well as other law enforcement personnel in rural Oregon. Today, Mr. Luca Chang is serving 35 years in the Oregon Department of Corrections. The families of the victims have closure, and we continue to enjoy a very professional, appropriate relationship with the Oregon State Police, much attributed to the leadership of Superintendent Evans and his command staff.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jason Myers. I'm Marion County Sheriff. I'm also the current president of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. And I'm here today on behalf of my association and as the Sheriff of Marion County in support of Oregon State Police's budget. Boy, you've heard a lot of great stories about the great work that the Oregon State Police is doing. I would just like to add, even an agency my size, a county my size, that's resourced fairly adequately, we depend daily on the Oregon State Police, whether it's backing us up on a call or taking a call for service if we're busy, or assisting us with an investigation, or the databases, or any of the other ancillary duties that they have. They do it with the utmost professionalism. And well, our situation is good here in Marion County. You've heard some of the other counties where it's dire straits, and I know that the state police is standing up in those communities and assisting the local law enforcement resources. I know that you have a lot of difficult choices, especially in the public safety funding area. And I just ask that as you make those choices that you keep the Oregon State Police at the top of your list, because they do provide a tremendous amount of service to the citizens of Oregon as first responders to public safety needs. I'd also like to close by commending Superintendent Evans. He's been a 10. He's very good at communicating, working closely with the sheriffs around the state. He's attentive to issues. His staff's great. The organization's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dan Steele, Mike Breed, and Becky Jackson. And next up is Ralph Groner, Bill Cluding, and Lana Butterfield.
Let her know I have a question later.
You have a question now?
No, after this during this panel. Anyway.
During this panel, you have a question?
Okay.
Yeah.
I have.
Chair Williamson, committee members, my name is Dan Steele. After what I've just heard, I'm extremely proud to be a former member, retiree of the Oregon State Police. It's very nice to see that tradition that Representative Krieger and others of us who I feel worked very diligently to conform to fair, firm commitment, Oregon law enforcement is still there and very proud. I represent the Oregon Outdoor Council, which is a group of businesses in Oregon, from Gerber knives to Benchmade knives to loophole scopes, and actually thousands of hunters and anglers. We realize that natural resource protection is a key component to natural resource management. A theft is a theft, whether it's of a building product at a construction site or of a Rocky Mountain elk. It's a theft. It's a crime against the public and all of our quality of life. Our fish and wildlife troopers are rural components of a larger law enforcement system, but a key component to make sure that that system actually works. Nationally, I just did some review on how we look at poaching, and I'm actually be attending a national conference in May in Louisville, Kentucky, regarding the issue. And Oregon's kind of a leader. We actually look at this crime as a very important, and we actively work it. But we have not kept up with the level of staffing or funding that will make us and allow us to maintain that national leadership. So we would request not only that we support the governor's budget, but we wish the governor would have actually enhanced that budget. So, you know, let's look at from snowy plovers on Oregon beaches to the Wallowa Mountains and Rocky Mountain goats. That's what our troopers are doing, from horseback to sled boats to airplanes to Zodiacs on our oceans. These guys are absolutely irreplaceable components. And we're one of two states that have this component in our state police force. And there's a real reason for that. I think it's a level of professionalism, a level of training that is unsurpassed. So with that said, wanting to stay within time, thank you and we would love to see make sure that this is actually an enhanced component.
Thank you. 30 seconds under.
Ooh.
Go ahead. Hi, I'm Madam Co-Chair Williamson and Madam Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee. Thank you for having us here today. I'm here to, well, my name is Becky Jackson. I work for the Oregon State Police CJIS Division, the Criminal Justice Information System. I am the president of the local 896 AFSCME support staff for all of OSP throughout the state. And I'd like to tell you just a little bit about one of our divisions that is so important and give you a little bit of background, which is why I might need that 30 seconds, that, you know, we're all passionate about our job at the CJIS division. We are combined with the firearms background unit, with the computerized criminal history unit, the ABIS unit, LEDS unit, and we do all of the input for the LEDS system. Without us, no law enforcement agency in the state, in the country, feds, any of the 50 states, well, 49 other than us, plus Interpol, could get the information that they need without the work that we do in this division. And I just want to tell you that it's a very passionate job for us. I mean, we love to be able to support all of the law enforcement. And just to give you a little bit of background here, I mean, we literally house all of the fingerprint cards of every arrest. Either we have the master cards, the original one, we have them housed in our division. We have additional arrests imaged so that we can access them to make comparisons for other arrests, make sure we have the right perpetrator. And just a couple of the things mentioning imaging. Just in March, we imaged over 20,000 extra arrest cards, just in March. And in and talking about fingerprints and our ABIS unit, there were 21,000 automated adult submissions for January and February. There were 479 manual submissions. And in addition to that, we had 20,500 submission criminal cards. That's a lot of work. And without our employees inputting this data, no one would have access to it. The troopers would be going up to a car blind. They wouldn't know who they were talking to. At the same time, we also enter the court data. So we have the dispos that come in directly to us. Last month, well, for the same time period, that would be January and February, we had 4,392 dispos that came in that have to be entered to complete that criminal history. And we had 8,000 automatic submissions during that time. So you can start to see how much work we get. And it's vital to everyone that this information be put in and everything kept updated as quickly as possible, and we continually fall behind on that.
You have your extra 30 seconds burned up. So I did give it to you. So if you could just wrap up really quickly, that'd
okay.
be great.
Just wanted to let you know that the other things we do, we process all the CHLs. We process all the copies of own records. We do the set-asides from courts. We do the expungements from courts. We handle all the juvenile processing. And we have the LEDS enforcement, data system reps and trainers there as well, plus the firearms unit. So I thank you so much for your time. And if anyone has any questions now or later, please feel free to ask.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Co-Chair Williamson and members of the committee. There's going to be a longer version of my testimony available to you as soon as we're done. My name is Mike Breed. I live over in Sheridan. I work for the Oregon State Police support staff in the CEGIS department, and I'm here representing Ask Me Local 896 as its treasurer. The reason I'm here is to talk not only to ask you to support complete and stable funding for the
Mike,
Oregon
can I interrupt you? Can you push the mic back from you a little bit? There we go. They're really sensitive, and so...
That better?
That's much better. Thank
and forgive
you.
My voice, guys. I've got that cold that's been going around.
That's fine.
I don't always sound like this. So not only do I want you to support complete and stable funding for the Oregon State Police, but I'd like you to seek out additional funds for better compensating your greatest assets, your employees. We're all aware that over the years, trooper numbers have declined. The thin blue line of protection gets thinner every time a position goes unfilled. And as that line has gotten thinner, we're all aware that criminals have gotten meaner and their crimes more heinous. We need to strengthen that blue line. We need to close those gaps between troopers, and the only way to accomplish that is with stable and adequate funding. In my job as support staff to the Oregon State Police, I perform CEGIS background checks on potential employees of the state or for vendors and contractors doing business with the state. This could be office staff, managers, department heads, could be janitors, it could be landscapers, and any vendor and contractor. Anyone and everyone that works in an area where sensitive information is accessible must be fingerprinted and pass the CEGIS background investigation. And then there's our fixed group, the Firearms Instant Check System. These are employees that work 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days per week with only 2 closed days off during the year, Thanksgiving and Christmas. These people are tasked with a great responsibility. Not only do they deal with the American citizen's Second Amendment rights by allowing or denying a firearm sale, they must become adept at quickly and accurately deciphering a myriad of background information that's used to make that decision. Does the buyer's record show that it's all clear and an easy approval, or does it show outstanding wants or warrants, probation or parole, criminal convictions and of what severity, crimes of domestic violence, or no disposition at all on the record? And they must do this at a rate of over 5,000 transactions per week, all the while maintaining a courteous, professional attitude as the customer service voice of the Oregon State Police. These customer service reps feel the wrath from angry gun dealers when a sale must be denied. They face an even bigger wrath when they must call back any and every customer requesting information as to why they were either delayed or denied. These customer service reps also have the ability to directly dial the dispatch center and have a trooper dispatched to a gun dealer's location if someone forbidden is attempting to buy a gun. And this all takes training. Training that takes at least 3 to 6 months before you're released to make decisions on your own about whether an approval or denial is given on a gun sale. Ladies and gentlemen, we all carry a great responsibility, but your troopers and your firearms department, they need you to find stable funds and additional funds for the Oregon State Police. Great resources are expended to bring in good and qualified candidates to work for the Oregon State Police. I implore you, find them, train them, pay them well, and keep them. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Krieger.
Stan, two quick questions. You got to have quick answers.
Yes and no?
I want to have it articulated again. It has to do with why do we need the dedicated funds specifically in the game division?
Well, it's actually a manpower, a staffing issue, an FTE issue. We need to make sure that those funds are always available for our agency to actually have the amount. The legislation, ORS, actually says the appropriate amount. Well, that's kind of a variable thing. So those dedicated funds are going to be very crucial, I think, to making sure that that staffing is maintained.
Okay. And the second one would be in our rural communities where we're having trouble with the sheriff's offices maintaining people available. Tell us how within the game division, how they work with those other agencies.
You know, for my 25 years, I worked in Benton County and East Lincoln, North Lane, South Polk. All those counties, at one time we had 23 troopers working the Corvallis office. The Corvallis office is now closed. There were 2 game troopers there. In other words, we put those resources, those needs, from rapes to illegal spotlighting of a deer, we lost those OSP resources, and so that burden shifts. shifted to our counties. And what we had to do as game officers then was become actually rural troopers in the fact that we trained our county people on how to help us, assist us in fish and wildlife enforcement because of actually the manpower cuts that the agency, our agency, OSP, has had to take. So, you know, that is one of the specific problems that I see in our Fish and Wildlife Division is we've been status quo for decades. We actually need to enhance it. And there's really no end easy solution. We understand the monetary situation, but implore is a great word. We need more.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Al, Bill, and Lana are up next, and then Penny Lynch and Tom Wolf, and anyone else who wants to get on the list. Now is the time.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Co-Chair and members of this wonderful committee. I hope my time's not counted on behalf of the lobby for the first handout you're getting. We want to praise the retired state police working in this Capitol. I'll be very honest with you. I think the flags out there are wonderful, and I think Charlie on top of the Capitol is wonderful. But if you walked around these halls the way we do, full time, you would understand.
I don't know who he is.
I'm Ralph Groner, Oregon. Asked me. I thought I did. I apologize. I apologize. God, he's mad at me.
You just identified yourself as the
Ralph,
lobby.
We're not mad at you. No.
I did it. We just want you to know from almost all of us in this Capitol, and I know that includes you, these people that are retired police out here in the hall, and you have their pictures, do more to not only to keep us safe, but quite frankly, the public absolutely loves them, and it gives a better picture of this building. So there. Again, I'm the same Ralph Groner. Removing myself from that, I'd like to say we support the budget. I worked where I'm a little different, except Wayne was here at least. I worked door-to-door under Kulongoski to fund this agency. And I thought we had the votes. We had 14 Republicans say yes. Andy Olson was here. I woke up the next morning, and the votes we had to fund this agency with beer tax, in case I'm not clear, if you're newcomers. I had busted my, pardon me way I talk, I'm labor. I busted my rear. And frankly, I had the president of the patrol with me, and we door-to-doored every legislator, and we thought we had the votes, and the next morning it evaporated. I call it romanized. And so I was romanized, and I've learned to stay away from beer tax. So top priority, you've heard it, top priority, quite frankly, you got to find, you're the board of directors, I'm not bugging you, you got to find a permanent source of funding for this agency. And quite frankly, there's a bill in liquor, that's fine with us. I wouldn't care if you put a on an automobile, whatever you do, it's going to take courage. But quite frankly, we have to permanently staff this agency. I'll mention one backlog that came up here from several on. We represent my union, not the troopers, I'm sorry. We do represent, however, forensics, scientists, the labs, the background checks on everything from guns to people going to work. And but we have 300 to 400 members. And we're one team with the troopers, because without my members, that trooper pulls someone over, doesn't really know who they're pulling over. And that's one of the great examples of why our staff's here, and I want to thank them. Forensics is short, 3 scientists. And you probably say to me, Ralph, we got schools, we got PERS coming at us, we've got another big problem with the kicker. I understand total budgets, that's my background. The fact of the matter is, if you can ever afford it, it's penny-wise and pound-foolish to not adequately fund forensics. And the reason for that is it draws out cases. Your lawyer draws out the cases, and you are going to be using more people and more time. And the fact is that costs a lot of money. If we had these sent to the jury, if we had dissent to the district attorney, the prosecution, et cetera, frankly, you could curtail a lot of the time and effort and bureaucracy that's going on because we're short. Our backlog is horrendous. And I know you're short on money, so I'm not preaching. I do hope we can find permanent funding because your district attorneys, and we do represent Multnomah County DAs, the state attorneys, Lane, other counties, we represent not just who I said, but public safety state in this state. So the backlog needs to be solved, but first and foremost isn't just that. It's a fact that we have to, and you all have courage. We've got to find a way and find it quickly to fund with permanent solution this agency. I've got rural counties. We're already funding my union, Polk County. Where do you think the money for the election is coming from right now? My local. Josephine County, what have I had? Three elections. Where's the money coming to pay for those elections? You may not have known this. My union. We are involved trying to help public safety from the DAs in those counties to the police to the entire system. We've failed so far, but we'll keep trying. And I know you will, and I thank you for allowing us to my members to be here today and for the work you do. Thank you.
Representative Krieger.
The reason you didn't get your bear tax, you didn't know how to sing to Paul Romaine. It's one penny, two penny, three penny, four. What kind of a bear tax would you vote for?
Now I can't answer. That's good.
Well, I just want to thank you, Ralph, for bringing up the retired state troopers who are in this building. They do a really great job for us and for the public that come to this building every day. So thank you for reminding us in this budget hearing about the great work that they do. Thank you. Lana.
Madam Co-Chair, Co-Chair Shields and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lana Butterfield, and I'm not sure I can adequately follow that, but I'll try. I'm here on behalf of the Pacific Propane Gas Association. They are regulated by the State Fire Marshal's Office. We think they do just a bang-up job, and we're here to support their budget. I asked my members, I told them I was going to come here and support them, and so I asked my members what they would like me to say. And Art Huddleston responded that we're proud to work with them. Their professionalism and understanding of our industry is quite amazing for a group of regulators. Their interaction is quite valuable and well-received among the rank and file of the propane business. So there you have my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, co-chairs. For the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council, and a concerned citizen. Years ago, the OSP budget was enough to handle. We had a large number of state troopers on the road, plus all the clerical, all the behind-the-scenes people. We all remember that that number at one time was here, and it got cut way back. It took a lot of years, and we've only gained back just a little bit. But yet, the population has doubled. And my opinion, we have four times the crime and the crime element out there today, not counting the domestic problems. I have members all over this state, especially in rural Oregon. I live in Polk County. If it wasn't for the limited number of state police on the road between 10 and 6 in the morning, Polk County would really be in trouble. We have counties all up and down in Oregon in that trouble. You notice when I signed my name on that list, I put the OK stamp on the budget, but I drew an arrow and wrote down more. And I'll stop right there and thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, thank you very much.
We'll see you Monday.
Penny Lynch and Tom Wolf. And then that's all I have for folks who have written their names down to testify. So
I'm guessing that Tom is at another hearing.
My name is Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon, of Oregon, co-chairs and members of the committee. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages the informed and active participation in government. Usually you will see Karen Nibbler, another of our volunteers, sitting in the back of the room and following the public safety budgets. But the reason I am here today has to do with the hat I'm wearing. I served on the External Budget Advisory Committee for the ODF&W budget as we worked on it to try to find solutions to the $32 million shortfall. And one of the issues is an issue that you are grappling with today. I come here today to support the general fund request in the Oregon State Police budget for the Fish and Wildlife Division. These troopers are important to rural Oregon, not only for their enforcement duties to ODF&W, but for the day-to-day public safety service they offer to underserved populations, particularly in rural Oregon. The second reason I'm wearing this hat belongs to my 87-year-old uncle, who's a volunteer with Fish and Wildlife. This last January, in a rural part of Oregon, because of dementia, he walked away from his home. If it had not been for the Fish and Wildlife trooper, who knew who he was and who lived in the community and could help, we wouldn't have him today. Today he is in a secure dementia care facility and happily surviving. But I just want to make sure that you get the nexus that I think Representative Krieger was trying to make with Stan. These ODF&W troopers do more than do fish and wildlife enforcement. They are the day-to-day, on-the-ground people for many of our rural Oregonians. So we ask for your support for the $5 million that's in the governor's budget that didn't make it into the co-chair's framework, but we hope that you will put it back.
Thank you.
Be happy to answer any questions.
So do we know that Tom is coming?
Yes, sir.
His message is pretty much the same.
All right. Well, what we're going to do is Mr. Ayers is here, so I'm going to ask him to come up and do his presentation. And then if we find Tom, we can add him into the mix. And I just sprung this on Mr. Ayers, so I know he doesn't have all of the materials that make him comfortable doing this in front of us. So if he has to follow up to answer a question, that is my fault.
This is rest this weekend. What date are we on the?
331.
Thank you for being flexible.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Art Ayer. I'm with the Chief Financial Office in the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm here today to give you a high-level overview of the governor's budget for the Department of State Police. As we have already heard from testimony from the department, they have a number of issues, including the need for additional troopers and vehicles to allow them to have better access or better response to calls for service, the need to replace the aging crime view data system, the need to backfill some fish and wildlife funding so that they can maintain the fish and wildlife troopers, 17 or more fish and wildlife troopers would be maintained with that funding. The need to respond to ballot measure 91 implementation, and we've built into the budget the other funds that are projected to come from OLCC for that, but I think there's certainly an open discussion as to exactly what is going to be needed to respond to ballot measure 91. And then the need for some adjustment to facilities, including the movement of the Springfield office. That's in a wetlands area. It's too small for what they need. And then the Astoria office is in a tsunami zone. So there's a plan to move that to a non-tsunami zone place in Warrenton. Obviously, Department of State Police fits into the public safety vision, a very important piece of the public safety group of agencies. The governor's budget supports the agency's current service level and makes additional investments in troopers, vehicles, the start of the replacement of the data system, the infrastructure projects that I mentioned, the movement of the Springfield and Astoria offices, some operational costs that I didn't mention a moment ago for the use of the LEDS data switch, I believe is what it's called, the costs that the agency has to pay DAS, my agency, for DMV searches, essentially. And then, of course, implementation of ballot measure 91, we've built in that other funds limitation. This graph shows you the prior biennium's actual expenditures, the current biennium's legislatively approved budget through December of 2014, and then the governor's budget for the coming biennium. And obviously the bottom, the colors never come out quite the way I want them to. But the bottom group is the general fund, the bottom columns. And the general fund grows by I had the math in my notes and I don't have my notes with me, but the growth in general fund between the current biennium and the governor's budget for the next biennium is split not quite equally between essentially base adjustments and inflation and then policy option packages. So there are policy option packages that add to that general fund growth, and I'll talk about them in just a moment. So those investments include the backfill of other funds. Essentially, it's a decline in other funds plus an increase in costs in fish and wildlife that results in a need for $5.18 million of general fund to backfill the lost other funds or the lack of growth in that other funds. 20 additional patrol troopers, 33 additional patrol vehicles. I had all those numbers written down as to exactly what the general fund costs of each of those were, and I can certainly get those for you. The beginning of the Crime View data system replacement, that's, as you heard, a multi-biennium project. It would be started in the next biennium, and the governor's budget provides $2 million to get that started, $2 million of general fund to get that started. Movement of both the Springfield office, which includes the forensics lab there in Springfield, very important, and then movement of the Astoria office to a place out of the tsunami zone. And finally, that roughly, I want to say, $400,000 to $500,000 of general fund for the use of the DAS servers to do the motor vehicle queries. So those are the things that were added in the governor's budget. They total a little over, my recollection is a little bit over $16 million of policy option packages in general fund. The co-chair's framework, and this is taken essentially verbatim from the co-chair's framework. I guess you recognize that. It does maintain essentially core functions in state police. The governor's budget adds to that as identified on the prior slide. So that is the essence of my presentation. As I said, I don't have my backup material. If you have questions, I'd be happy to get that information to you. Any questions you have?
Representative Winsnett.
I have questions of Julie. Can I ask? For some reason, I missed the first day. We were with the budget on the
floor.
That's right.
You did.
On slide 10 of the beginning of the presentation.
Oh. Of the agency presentation, or
oh. Yeah, the old agency presentation. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
A little slow to download.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It talks about the general fund and lottery fund reductions. I don't understand that slide. The next two slides. What is that?
Let me take a look. So slide number 10.
Okay. All right. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Ayers?
Wasn't sure how to do that.
Okay. Mr. Ayer, I don't think anyone has any questions for you.
All right.
So we can release you.
Yes, you can adjourn.
Thank you very much.
And I can ask the questions. I don't care. You can adjourn if you want to. I'll ask the questions.
Oh, okay.
I'll ask it.
A little girl's quick.
We'll see. We were all on the floor, so.
Oh, I see what you're looking at. So on slide 10, one of the requirements, Representative Wisnett, for agency presentations is that they identify possible. If they were to take 10% reductions, what those would be. So,
would like
yeah,
okay.
so
that's
these
what
are,
I assume, but thank
yes,
you. Okay,
you were right.
Slide 12. I think in the testimony I heard that there were so many officers in training, but 76 long-term vacancies. Do we get other data from the department, from the state police on that? If this thing shows that there's 34 positions been longer than 12 months, but I think there was 20-some in training. Does that come out of the 34 and then we only have 42 vacant from then?
I'll invite up the superintendent.
I'm sorry, sir.
Sorry, we were on the floor.
Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee, for my record, my name is Richard Evans. I'm the superintendent of the state police. A lot of those, I can give you a detailed allotment, but a lot of those that were held vacancy for 12 months are trooper positions. I believe over half were trooper positions, and we wait till we have 20 to 30 vacancies before we hold a school, and we just hired a bunch of folks. In fact, bringing that back up 50. So I can give you a detailed account of that on Monday in our testimony, but that's most of what that is.
Okay, thank you, sir. That's sufficient. Thank you.
Questions?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Madam Chair.
Any questions? All right. Thank you both.
Before we gavel out, I want to have I had a question for LFO, or perhaps the House members might know. In full ways and means on Friday, there's a grant application for the Department of Justice on a crime victims program, but I don't recall it coming through our subcommittee. I was wondering if that rings a bell for any of you, or it might have been on a day when I wasn't here.
You were on the floor. Right. No, not that I know of.
The only one we've had is the fire engine, wasn't it? That was the only one we've had.
That's go through
my
health?
Impression, too. I don't know. Senator Devlin, I think, at least from our side, wants those grant proposals to come to the sub
right.
before they go to the full. So maybe we can, could you check in with
yes.
Linda? And then I don't know about you, Madam Chair, but I don't want to set that precedent that it's okay
yeah,
to
no,
go around
great.
The sub. And so if that's the case, I would ask the co-chairs to pull that grant proposal back and DOJ can come present it to us.
Okay, great. So I'm going to actually close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5531. And what is that for Monday?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the subcommittee, on Monday, we will finish up with the Oregon State Police. There are several divisions we didn't have a chance to hear from. And we will pick up with the gaming division on Monday.
All right. With that, we are adjourned. All right. With that, we are adjourned.